College Football Podcast with Herbie and Pollock. Now here's your host, Kevin Nagandi.
Well, the best weekend so far this college football season is almost here. Four top 25 matchups. Feels like we're going to sort some things out by the end of Saturday night. And fresh out of his cave after watching tape the last 48 hours, David Pollock joining us. I asked Herbie this on Monday. How hot was it in Gainesville on Saturday? Now, I know you're a country boy from the South, but really, how hot was it?
It was Africa hot, bro. It was hot. It was, at one point I thought Kirk was melting on the side set. I mean, he was just dripping sweat like nobody's business. I felt honestly horrible for him, but it was definitely hot. Hey, I got one question for you real quick, Kevin, after your weekend. Yeah. Are you going to pick Iowa again?
Oh, man. we'll get to our picks in that conversation another time. Well, no, you know what's great? Yeah, and let's get the listeners in this a little bit, because you were texting me and you were talking all kinds of trash when it was 10-3, and you were all in on Michigan. And there were a couple times where you were sweating things out in the fourth quarter, but that Michigan defense was just so ridiculously good against Nate Stanley, who I felt bad for at a certain point.
The return of Don Brown. Good Lord, that was something. They had seven sacks on the season. All of a sudden, they got eight in that game and create four turnovers. And if you want a good idea of where Michigan's offense is, their defense created four turnovers, completely locked down an opponent, and they scored 10 points. So if you're a Michigan fan, you better push the panic button like crazy, because Jim Harbaugh, quote, said, "I feel like we're almost clicking on all cylinders." That means you're riding a two-cylinder, maybe a one-cylinder this whole season the rest of the way, because that shiznick is broke. That ain't good.
Yeah. Yeah, you're pushing a Pinto or a Yugo right now. And honestly, it was a classic Michigan-Iowa game. And when I say classic, it's not so much that they're great watches. It's just history was repeating itself over and over again on every single possession, where it was punt, punt, turnover, punt, punt, and it was a tough watch. And you know, and you can make the case that while you're watching, you know, Auburn and Florida play out, you're seeing very similar things in the sense of punt, turnover, punt, punt, turnover, but it's just a different style. The guys are much, much faster, and man, those boys were hitting in the swamp hard on every single play. When you watch the tape, what did Florida's defense show you against Auburn and Bo Nix?
I mean, you're talking about eight turnovers in that ball game, so it definitely was sloppy when it comes to an offensive standpoint. Obviously, the majority of them were fumbles, for goodness sakes, and those are due to hard hits. But no, you know what? Florida's defense, and keep in mind, they were out Jabari Zuniga, too, which is one of their best players.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was dressed, but he didn't get to play because he's still not healthy yet. So that'll be a welcome addition probably to get him back against LSU. But just fast, physical linebackers, safeties, corners, all tied in really well. They got two corners. They keep them feel very comfortable leaving on islands out wide. And that's a very nice thing to have in a day of spread offenses when you need your safeties to rock and live, depending on the jet sweeps and the jet motion and the motion you have to be able to rock with them. So I was just impressed with Florida's speed, their physicality, and they did a great job of absolutely destroying Auburn. Not like making them or slowing them down. I mean, you're talking about, this is an Auburn team that last week against Mississippi State, I thought was like, man, they turned the corner. Like, you could tell Bo Nix was seeing it. The tempo was starting to be a better thing. The running game was good, mixed with the passing game in combination. They had 269 yards. That's 7-3 and outs, Kevin. They couldn't convert any. They couldn't even convert third and short time after time. It was a 100% reality check for Bo Nix and for the Auburn offense.
And obviously, a huge role in that game was the swamp. What was that environment like? Take me there, because I've watched videos. I've seen a couple things. My brother-in-law is at the game. I've talked about this, how my wife is a Gator as well. And you watch some of these videos. You see the crowd on the P. Ryan run, and it gets just like a wave. It gets louder and louder as he breaks a couple tackles. And then the final 40 yards, it was pandemonium and chaos, which is great. I mean, it's great for college football. What's it like being there in a moment in a game like that where it felt like the swamp is back?
It's awesome. It's awesome for college football. It's awesome for the Gators. And listen, Dan Mullen's already brought excitement. His first year, he brought excitement. Now you can tell you know, bringing even more excitement. And this is the, you know, it was a good reminder for me, Kevin, when we're making our picks, that home field matters. And I don't always consider home field. And sometimes you just look at X's and O's and what they've done and who they beat. The hardest thing to do in college football is to go win on the road. It is the hardest thing to do week in and week out. Your communication becomes harder to do. The momentum becomes harder to switch. And when it snowballs, a lot of times it's hard to get it back. And the Swamps got it back, and they were rocking and rolling. And it's good to see Florida playing so well. And, you know, how about Kyle Trask, too, man? Tip of the cap, bro. I mean, that dude, I thought – we talked about it already. One of the coolest stories in college football, him finally getting a shot after not starting for 7 years. I thought he was done, Kevin. I thought David –
Uh-huh. I'm with you.
I thought he tore his knee up, man. I was like, dadgum, and I hate to see that for that young man that showed such grit and toughness and stuck with his team. And then all of a sudden he comes out with a knee brace and still starts spinning. And here's another thing, too, that's underrated. Dan Mullen did such a good job, because if you look at the box score, you're not going to see, you know, you're not going to see greatness from Florida. You're going to see very averageness. They didn't run the football great, obviously, minus the P. Ryan run. But they really manufactured some great matchups. And that's what Dan Mullen, typically in the past, I've always given him a lot of credit for, is his ability to find matchups. And did an awesome job on both touchdown passes. Unbelievable scheme of moving your tailback out of the backfield, putting them wide on the corner, running a double move, running a go with your tight end, and clearing that space where you can run a little stick route in between and get a great matchup for one of your best players. And match up your best player on a linebacker. You know, I talked last week on the podcast about KJ Britton. He's a hammer, and he's a run defender and such a stud. I did not talk about his pass coverage for a reason. That's not his specialty. He's a hammer. And how about Swain getting matched up with him, you know, on play two of the ball game? A great job seeing the corner blitz. Awesome, you know, isolation on a linebacker versus a wide receiver, because you had your wide receiver in the three spot, you know, in the slot. And just taking advantage of matchups. I thought Mullen did a great job manufacturing a couple big plays, and that's all they needed.
Yeah. By the way, Britt, that hit against Pierce was devastating on both sides. I mean, that was one of those you're going to feel for a couple of days. And Pierce felt it when he had to leave the field. But I felt bad for Britt the rest of the way. The guy just loves to keep on delivering and smacking everybody. And that's why how I brought the conversation up, where it just had a different feel. While sloppy, very much the same in the Michigan-Iowa game, but this was a different feel where you were like, oh, my gosh, good luck. Whoever's going to be standing left at the end is going to win this game. And that is a guy like Trask, who I'm with you. For him to come back out there, it was like a moment where it's like, there is no way am I going to miss the rest of this game. And I thought Emory Jones came in, and he was pretty prepared for him on that drive to give them at least points. And that just shows you that Mullen has these guys prepared and ready to go. Now, the preparation's a completely different thing here when we talk about going on the road, night game in Death Valley, and that place in Baton Rouge is a different story. Now they're 13.5-point dogs. What must they do to counter defensively against Joe Burrow in this offense?
Well, the interesting thing is, you know, Florida's best strength, I think, defensively, they got great cover guys on the outside, which again, you're going to have against Joe Burrow and this team. They bring pressure, and they know how to pressure the quarterback, the interior and the exterior. The interior of that defense has, you know, six sacks, and it's going to have to come from all over the place, and they need Zuniga. They're going to need his pass rush ability. They're going to need his toughness and his playmaking ability. But it's just it'll be a different game plan, obviously, because it's going to be very heavy RPO dependent. And Joe Burrow, here's the thing about Joe Burrow that I don't think people realize. He's not the most fleet of foot, but he is the best in the country against the blitz. He has not turned the football over one daggum time. He is pressured, 71% completion percentage, the nation's best pass rating, 6 touchdowns, 0 picks. I mean, the dude is, he's unflappable, and he runs the RPO game to a T and so well. And then you go in the red zone where, you know, you really win and lose games. And I think this will be a huge area for this ball game. 14 TDs, 0 INTs. And, you know, that's going to be, it's going to be tough. It's going to be the toughest test also that he's had. He hadn't faced a Florida defense like this, and it's going to be a fun show.
you've just dropped two dadgums on the podcast, and so people can understand that you're a country boy. If we hear in the background a cow in the background, that's just a neighbor, right? That's just somebody.
Yeah, that's
just one of your people down the road, right? But I want to know though. When you got the cows, you got some birds in the background. Paint the picture here of this environment around the Pollock neighborhood. What else do we have in the neighborhood?
Okay, I'm looking straight out right now of my house, and literally it's pasture as far as you can see in front of you. And the cows are not here at the current moment. They're over the hill. They'll be back in a little bit, a few hours. But you got the cows, you got the donkeys right up the road. You got all kinds of animals. You got everything you can imagine. You got horses. So you literally have a little bit of everything. There's no telling what you might hear. I love hearing the cows, and I love hearing the birds. That's why I live in the country. The internet sucks, by the way. Let me just put that out there. The internet ain't great, bro. I got satellite internet. It ain't a strength, okay? But the view and the quiet and the solace is amazing.
Well, wait, but let's get back to the donkey situation now. Well, why do the donkeys stand out when you mention the cows? Because I'm fascinated by this story.
Okay, well, dude, you got to have protection for the cows. Okay, you can't have
and the donkey's the one that's protecting the cow. Usually, I grew up watching cartoons, and it's like a sheepdog that's protecting you from the coyotes and the wolves. But the donkeys do it.
The donkeys are the ones that do the trick, bro. You stand near them and you get kicked in the face, and good things ain't gonna happen, bro. They got some power, man. You definitely don't. Like, you gotta have the donkeys with the cows. Every farm you go, all over here, you see all the cows and you see all the donkeys out there running around with them. So I promise you. They're the protection, baby. They're the bodyguards.
You never cease to amaze. Each and every week I learn something, and I would have never thought the role of a donkey is to make sure it protects the cow. Watch out, coyotes. All right, we'll keep that in mind. We'll be back in a minute with much more from Pollock, but first a word from Allstate.
Because mayhem on Saturdays in the fall is inevitable. Mayhem happens on the field, off the field, and in the polls. Mayhem lives on the wind, in the rain, on the foot of an errant kick, and during a trap game. You'll find mayhem in the parking lot, during tailgates, charcoal that's not totally out, an errant football through a window, a flat tire, a lost side view mirror, etc. You get the point. Allstate protects you from mayhem in the parking lot and outside it, at home and away. You can't stop mayhem from happening, but you can get better protected from it with Allstate. The potential for mayhem during the playoff race is rampant. Underdogs, trap games, unexpected weather, etc., etc., etc. Get better protected from mayhem with Allstate. Contact your local Allstate agent today. Now back to the show.
Let's get back to the tape conversation. And which unit turned your head this week when you watched the tape?
Can I give you a negative? Because
yeah,
what the heck is Washington right now? Like I'm dumbfounded by Washington and just
I'm with you.
We come into the Stanford game and Stanford's got six bodies on the offensive line that are under scholarship. Two of them are freshmen. I mean, they're banged up. They're a mass unit. They're on their backup quarterback. Stanford pounds Washington in the face. I mean, owns the time of possession. 39-21. Run the ball. All of a sudden, they look like Stanford, pounding the ball. Scarlett has 150. They're one of the worst rushing teams in the country. And all of a sudden, they turn that around. And then you look at Washington's offense. I mean, it looked like Cal game all over again. You know, Jacob Eason didn't look good at all. By the way, how many wide receivers are going to drop passes for Washington consistently throughout the season? That's been a 100% theme for them. Their defense didn't get pressures and didn't get TFL. I was blown away, man. And here's the thing. Can we start talking about Washington's offense in a big realm? Because Jake Browning several years ago when they went to the playoffs, he was on fire and he was making big-time plays. The last 3 years, this offense, including now, has been very average at best. And something has to change. Jacob Eason can throw the ball all over the yard. You know, Hunter Johnson is a legit tight end. Fuller's a good receiver. Now, they've had some drops, but this offense should not be getting shut down by Stanford that – UCF is still scoring on them. Four and a half weeks later, they're still putting up touchdowns.
But you mentioned Cal. You mentioned the defense slowing them down, and we thought that was an that was an abnormality here because of one thing. The, you know, it's abnormal because the way that game played out, it was late. They were dealing with a delay. The game ended really late. So we were like, okay, we can accept that. But it felt like Stanford punched them in the face the same way Cal did, and they did not have a counterpunch. Did you get that vibe watching tape?
100%. In the first drive, Washington had a plan, and you could tell, and it worked, and they scored 7. But from that point on, it was bad, man. You know, it's interesting. We're talking about a lot of these games, Kevin, and I've been the first to tell you, football is a sport now that offense wins championships, not defense. Okay, that is shifted. I'm a defensive guy. I hate to say that. I don't like that at all in any way, shape, or form. Yeah. But it's fact, and we've seen the last several weeks, and we see, you know, whether it's Iowa, whether it's Michigan, whether it's Florida, whether it's Auburn, you're seeing some defensive, you know, sluggernauts, which is kind of surprising. It takes you back when you see games now that are 24-13. You're like, wait a minute, this is a horrible game. Nobody scored. Well, don't forget about Mississippi State Auburn. Was it 3-2? You know, years and years ago, where it was even worse. And the game of the century, you know, like 10-7. You know, I mean, we've had. It's changed so much. So when you see struggling offenses, it's almost like, wait, what's going wrong here? You should score a bunch of points.
Yeah, it's very weird. And honestly, you know, the Washington's such a big disappointment. They got Arizona, and Arizona is quietly sneaking up on everybody in the Pac-12 at 4-1. Then you got Oregon. So it's really hard to figure out where Washington is. You mentioned offenses, but I also know that there's a guy that has caught your eye. Who's your dude of the week?
Well, we're starting to do this and starting to catch on everywhere, brother, by the way. You're a man. This is all you. So we have to give credit where credit's due. Kevin Nagane deserves all the respect and all the credit. I tell you what, I think when you watch Alabama, the only question mark, kind of like LSU to me, by the way, the only question mark I really have offensively about them is the interior, is the center, is the guard-center-guard combination. A&M's going to play against Alabama this week. I can't wait to watch my boy. Justin, are you going to pronounce his name for me, or do I have to do it myself?
Yeah, is it Justin Matabike?
I'm sure. Sounds great. 52 is what I call it.
Yeah, 52 on the defensive front, Justin Matabike.
Matabike, yeah. My boy from Penn State still mad at me for destroying his name. So what was that? Was that Gross Matos? How do we finish off on that one?
Yeah, it's Gross Matos. Hey, listen, you said it on game day, and you were the only one that knew it because you were on the podcast when we went over it.
And because I butchered it 45,000 other times. So let's not give me too much credit for being right about that. But I tell you what, you watch 52 for A&M. He's the bright side of their defense, man. This dude has got heavy stone hands. He's got quickness. He's going to get double teamed all night. He gets double teamed all game. And that being said, he still has 16 pressures on the season. He's one of the bright spots right now. By the way, this is the last opportunity I'm going to have to talk about A&M because A&M is going to be officially like removed from college football discussions because they're not going to win very many games this season, and they're going to be a huge disappointment up to this point. But Justin has not.
Yeah, he's fantastic. And you can get a little bit thrown off, too, with the defensive tackle wearing a jersey number 52. But we'll see them, and I think a lot of people had circled that Alabama A&M game just because of the coaches, Saban versus Jimbo. But in reality, I'm trying to figure out where Jimbo's offense is now in year two, and they've taken a step back. We'll see how that if they could develop and get better as the season progresses because they close out the year at Georgia, at LSU. So we're talking about a team that could have 5 losses. A year ago, they had 4 losses. They were feeling good, but this schedule has been brutal for A&M. All right, man, so we've talked a little bit about A&M. We've talked a little bit about Alabama. We talked a little bit about Florida and LSU. The other game, before we go, real quick thoughts, too, because we're going to get more of a breakdown when we have our picks on Friday. But what are your initial thoughts when you watch Texas and you watch film on OU as they get ready for the Cotton Bowl? Because you can't say that let's favor the team that's at home here because we know what's at stake. And we know how both parties travel. So that place is going to be jam-packed on both sides.
It'll be an awesome atmosphere. It's one of the cooler scenes in college football when you split the crowd right down the middle. Last year when they played in the regular season, I picked Texas to win the ball game, and I picked Texas because of defense, and they really had a good defense. That is not the case this year. That is not the case at all. Now, their defense created a bunch of turnovers last week against West Virginia. It got some picks, and the secondary, you could argue, definitely looked better, but it's against West Virginia. I can't wait to watch both sides of the football on defense. I mean, I think both offenses are sensational. Both offenses are going to score a ton of points, but, you know, this will be a game that who can get some stops. Jalen Hurts, he looked mortal against Kansas, didn't he? He actually looked kind of like, hey, he didn't look superhuman for the first time in the season. And I think both teams, you know, one had Kansas, one had West Virginia, both have each other the next week. It's kind of like, hey, you know, we're going through the motions a little bit and we're preparing for next week, but the coaches aren't going to tell you. That was the funniest thing, by the way, to me, was before you had a big game, Kev, and you start, you break into scout work, right? And you start the plays from the other team. And, you know, they're running their plays and the coach hold up the cards for the other kids in the huddle for the scout team, and then they'll come out and run plays, and they'll run a play and you're like, I haven't seen that play at all. Like, what is that play? And then they'll run another one. I haven't seen that one at all. And then the next week when you're preparing for your big rival that came up, you're like, oh, I've seen this before.
Oh,
I saw this last week, and I bet you that was going on in Austin. I bet you that was going on last week with the Sooners as well. So I think both of them were kind of sloppy. But, I mean, defensively, how much improved is Oklahoma's defense? We're going to find out because Ellinger and company can score at will.
Yeah, it's going to be a test, and honestly, we'll get a little bit more information on Alex Grinch, the DC for Oklahoma. And we talk about the jump that they've made, but when you're facing a completely different team, Kansas is completely different from Texas when it comes to the offense. And Puka Williams, he was running against that defense that entire first half, and you're like, wow, why is this such a close game? You brought it up real quick, and before we let you go here, Velma and Sanchez are in the studio with me, and we're watching the game, and it's one thing we've noticed with Oklahoma, it feels like they are playing in slow motion. When you watch the tape, does it look like they're not as, and you brought up briefly, they're not as quick offensively right now, and they're more deliberate in everything they're doing? Yeah, tempo. Okay. It just seems so slow. I can't even describe it. It's like instead of playing at a 10, they're playing at a 6, 6.5 right now, and obviously that gear will change here against Texas. Is that what you're seeing as well?
I thought you were talking like CeeDee Lamb slow. I'm like, bro, what are you watching? That dude ain't slow up there.
No. I'm just saying CeeDee is choosing to be slow. You know?
And listen, I you also have to keep in mind and consider you had Kyler Murray who had been in the system for a while. You had Baker Mayfield who had been in the system for a while. They could do so much more stuff, and they could do it at warp speed. So, yes, they can't do as much as fast as they used to do. And that 100% will be a thing to monitor. Now, listen, the good thing is they haven't had to show anything the last several weeks because they've played trash for a while now. So once they start playing some better teams, it will be interesting to see and monitor that because that is, to me, that's been their biggest strength over the years is to be able to do so many different formations, so many different looks at warp speed. And so Jalen Hurts, I don't think will ever get to the point of Baker Mayfield or ever get to the point of Kyler Murray, but he's definitely going to have to be able to run that thing super fast to cause confusion when he plays against better defenses.
All right, I can't wait to get your pick. We're going to wait for that on Friday. We've got a lot of games to get to on Friday with
Iowa.
The picks. I'm sure I'm going to hear about that when we get to that. Appreciate it, brother. I'll talk to you soon.
All right, dude. Have a good one.
We'll be back in a minute with Heather Dinich, but first, make sure to tune in to my new favorite TV show, Fansville, presented by Dr. Pepper, returning every Saturday throughout the college football season during the commercials. Fansville is the only show that stars Dr. Pepper, puts the spotlight on fans, and perfectly captures the emotional roller coaster that is the college football season. Critics are saying it's good, fantastic. Is anyone else thirsty? And literally the best thing since Diet Dr. Pepper and Dr. Pepper Cherry. In Fansville, Dr. Pepper delivers a tour de force performance alongside legendary college football co-stars Brian the Boz Bosworth and Eddie George. Experience the pain, the passion, and the deliciousness of college football fandom this fall on Fansville, presented by Dr. Pepper. So pull over, veer right, slant left, do what you gotta do to get to your local store and pick up some refreshing ice cold Dr. Pepper, the official drink of Fansville. And hey, while you're at it, don't be afraid to go for two. And she will be probably the most busiest person in college football in the next, I'd say, month. And it's great to have her before that all happens. Heather Dinich, College Football Insider, joining us on the College Football Podcast. Heather, first off, it's great to talk to you when you're calm and refreshed and ready to go, because we understand what's going to be happening in the next 4 weeks and your demand, and everybody will be wanting to talk to you about what's going to happen with the playoff, especially when you look at the tier here in that first tier. When you assess the first month going into October, what are your biggest takeaways of the season so far?
Well, I think the biggest right now, as we head into week 7, is that the Big Ten and the SEC have separated themselves from the rest with 4 undefeated teams each. And I think when you look at the pecking order of the Power 5 conferences, the Pac-12 is in the worst possible shape. But they're also ahead of the curve in that they've already beaten each other up, right? We're going to see that coming up from the Big Ten and the SEC. They haven't quite reached that conference play yet where they all play each other and start to knock each other out like the Pac-12 has. But I think that's one of the biggest takeaways, is that the SEC and the Big Ten have really separated themselves, not just because of the depth, but because of the contenders within that depth, right? In the ACC, you just have Clemson. If you look out west, you've got Oregon. But we don't know. Penn State might be a contender. Wisconsin is certainly playing its way into the conversation with Ohio State, right? And then in the SEC, I mean, take your pick. LSU, Florida is in the mix right now. Alabama, obviously. And then you've got, it's just, there are more than one contender, and I think that's what's separating those guys.
Now, I want your personal opinion, too, when we look at things, because, you know, you can judge a bunch of things after 6-7 games, but it looks like we're in tiers here, right, where we have 1-6. It depends. You could even make it 1-8 if you want to throw in Florida and Wisconsin. That could change for Florida this weekend against LSU. And then you have Notre Dame, and then Penn State's that weird undefeated at 10 because we're trying to figure them out. How do you view this? Do you view it as a tier? Like, there is literally a tier of the top 6, and then there's a second tier, and then there's a third tier. How do you view it?
I honestly try to look at it the way a selection committee member would, to get in their heads, which is that top 12, 13, maybe going all the way down to Oregon, is still in play and should be talked about until proven otherwise, until Oregon loses that second game, until Auburn loses that second game, or Texas loses to Oklahoma. I think I look at it and try to keep an open mind and remember that come November, you can have two loss conference champions. I mean, look at what we had last year. My goodness, mm-hmm. In terms of the Pac-12, and what if Texas would have won the Big 12, or what if we would have seen an upset in the Big 10 championship game? All of those things have to be evaluated together when trying to figure out the final top 4. So as easy as it is to look right now and say, oh, it's Alabama and Clemson and Ohio State and take your pick from the SEC. Yeah. Well, hold on a minute. It might not be.
How do you view, for example, Texas, Oklahoma, especially with the possibility of them facing off against? How do you view the idea of Wisconsin versus Ohio State a little bit later this season, especially with the possibility that they could face off again? You know, Jonathan Velma, one of my, you know, partners on the ABC halftime show, he made a case where he's like, there's literally no pressure on Ohio State and Wisconsin when they face off against each other for one reason and one reason only. He specifically was talking about Wisconsin. He was like, because Wisconsin will get another shot at Ohio State in the Big Ten championship. So in the regular season, he's like, there's no pressure. And I was a little taken aback by that. How do you view it?
Well, I think he's right in a sense that that's what it's gearing up towards. But I'm sitting here going, man, they better not lose at home to Michigan State, because that can happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You know? And,
you're right.
But he is right. But I think the best thing for the Big Ten is obviously for those two teams to be undefeated heading into that game in Columbus. But it's very similar to me in terms of what we saw last year from the Big 12. Right, where OU lost that game, Ohio State could lose to Wisconsin and then get the redemption shot in the Big Ten championship game. But I think it's a little different in the Big 12 this year because Oklahoma, if you remember last year, had that chance to go on the road on Friday night in Morgantown and impress the committee with a Friday night road win against West Virginia. They don't have that this year. Right now, beyond Texas, their only ranked opponent is Baylor. And, you know, take your pick, but I don't think they're going to stay that way. So, to me, the Red River Showdown this year is even more important for both of those teams because that could be their only ranked opponent.
Yeah, and it's a great point, too, because that was at the end of the season, that Oklahoma game at West Virginia, and that was a shootout. Was it 59-56, right? And,
yeah.
You see all the points, and it was really hard. It was hard to gauge them, and then they got the chance to play Texas once again and get that revenge in that contest in the Big 12 title. All right, now, there are a couple of other scenarios, and scenarios that I'm sure we will tackle at a certain point. Maybe potentially in mid-November, late November, that conversation when we start to see quality teams with one loss and then they would join a team like Notre Dame. What do we do with Notre Dame if they roll here and they only have one loss and it's that Georgia game in Athens where they were pretty good in that game. They held their own in that game, but what's working against them is the schedule and the teams that they are playing who are on down years. Like USC, we'll see what happens this week. And like a Michigan, like, you know, you go back into who they have played in the past and teams that you felt like, okay, this is a tough schedule. Not so much this year. How do you view Notre Dame with a one loss, fighting Irish team with these other teams potentially having one loss in the November conversation?
Right. Well, you nailed it in terms of strength of schedule. They need help. I mean, Stanford is an average team. Washington should not have lost that game to Stanford. But when you look at them, not only do they have to run the table, obviously, and look good doing it, but they also need some of those other programs like Stanford. I mean, look, you're talking about Michigan has to stay ranked, and you've got Virginia Tech, Duke, Navy, Boston College. None of those teams, as we sit here right now, are going to do much to boost Notre Dame's resume. And Brian Kelly and Jack Swarbrick, their athletic director, know this. I've talked to them at length about this. This is what you get when you don't have a conference championship. You don't have that final opportunity to compensate for that Georgia loss. And Georgia's got the head-to-head, right? So if they're going against Georgia for a spot, you're either going to take both or Notre Dame is going to get bumped out because Georgia beat them. So, you know, I think they're in a tough spot and they need some help from the rest of the country, not only from the teams on their schedule to play better, but for some other teams, maybe a little bit of chaos. I don't think they're a given with one loss with that schedule.
Well, Notre Dame's rooting for chaos. One team that actually is hoping that there's no chaos, at least for them, especially when you look at their schedule, is Clemson. And you look at the way the ACC is shaped up, and listen, okay, you got A&M. I give them credit for having A&M on the schedule, but A&M is not A&M, I think, that we expected in year two with Jimbo so far. How do you view Clemson? What happens if the Tigers lose one game this season the rest of the way, and then you see some powers that continue to roll? Because, listen, I think in the SEC, we will potentially have one undefeated team. We could potentially have one undefeated Big Ten team. How does that all play out if those two scenarios hold true and then you have a one-loss Clemson team?
Clemson's in big trouble if they lose a game, in my mind. And I think as difficult as it is for fans and some coaches and people outside that selection committee debate room to forget last year, those selection committee members are supposed to erase that. Okay, now I can't vouch for what all 13 people do individually, but if you do forget about last season and evaluate Clemson on its own merit based on this schedule with one loss, they could be left out. And I feel like that's shocking for people to hear because people think about last year, but the selection committee doesn't do that.
Yeah, and you know, people also think about this summer and like who they have back, right? And, oh, well, let's not forget, look at the offense. My biggest fear for Clemson is that, okay, let's just say they roll the rest of the way. Will they be ready in the playoff to face a team like hypothetically Georgia or Alabama and see that speed that they haven't seen all season, right? That's the one thing that scares me if you're a Clemson fan. Have they had enough reps against quality teams to be prepared when the next stage comes up? And that is, of course, would be December 28th if they roll and they get the chance and the opportunity to play in the semifinal. And you mentioned a little bit about the Pac-12. How do you view the Pac-12 right now? Is this one of those things where the entire conference is rooting for potentially Oregon or Utah the rest of the way, just so they have one team survive the cannibalism that we witness?
Right, yes. And it's Oregon. And I know Utah fans are screaming, what about us? We're good too. I get that. But if it comes down to a one-loss debate between other Power 5 conference champs, I think Utah would lose because they played BYU, Northern Illinois, and Idaho State. Uh-oh, right? Uh-huh. Whereas, even Alabama playing Duke has an argument against that, right? But I think when you look at Oregon, yes, they have to hang their hats on the Ducks because that's what's considered a good loss. We'll see what happens with Auburn. I'm assuming they don't come completely unraveled down the stretch, but people have to realize that it's not just how many top 25 teams did you beat. You know, how you look, there's so many different factors in it. And if Oregon finishes as a one-loss Pac-12 champ, I'm certainly not saying that they're going to finish in the top four, but people have to realize they'll be in the debate, and it depends on what happens with everybody else.
Yeah, and they have a stretch here for the next 4 weeks. You got Colorado Friday night, then on the road at Washington, a team that I feel like has disappointed a lot of people, then Washington State, and then at USC. And who knows, USC could be one of those that we're not going to make it, but we're taking everybody down with us. That's what it seems like the theme of this season has been, right?
It's
a tough situation. And honestly, like, I really thought Washington was the team to hang your hat on the rest of the way. And then what happened that last week against Stanford, you just walk away and you're like, your guess is as good as mine on what's going to happen in this conference. I have no idea how this is going to play out.
So true.
And Heather, how do you view another team? How do you view Wisconsin? Because Wisconsin's in this position here. I feel like everybody talks about Michigan. Everybody talks about Ohio State. I think soon, after what we see on Saturday night, people will be talking a lot about Penn State. How do you view Wisconsin?
You know what's funny? I was talking to Ohio State Athletic Director Gene Smith about the 2014 Big Ten Championship game earlier this week, yesterday actually. And, you know, he was talking about how Wisconsin deserves more credit. And I said, Gene, I think people are waiting for them to beat you to really get that nod. He's like, no, you're right. And it's true. I think Wisconsin to me has just been so consistently good and right there. But it needs to beat Ohio State, whether it's in Columbus in the regular season or in the Big Ten Championship, for the rest of the country to realize just how close they are to closing that gap with them. Now, I don't know. Maybe it's another 59-0 game, right? But based on what we've seen so far and Jonathan Taylor being in the mix for the Heisman, and that's what Paul Chryst does. You know every game what they're going to do. Stop us. Right? And nobody's been able to do it so far. We'll see if the Buckeyes can do it. Their defense is so good too. But to me, that's what everybody's waiting for, is for them to get that real signature win. You know, Michigan was a good win. They played really good, but there's a better opportunity out there.
Yeah. Mentioned Michigan State this weekend and then Illinois on the road. But if they do something at the Shoe on October 26th, it changes the entire conversation, especially the playoff conversation about the Badgers. Let's play a game here. And our producer Taylor had a great concept here, because, you know, the first 6 weeks of the college football season, you kind of figure out some things. And when we talk about the bowl season, there are some teams that are kind of teetering. And I want to play a game here called the injury tent, all right? We're going to go through three categories. Probable to return, that means they should make a return to a bowl. Mm-hmm. Questionable to return, the prospects are still iffy. And out, no shot. I'll name the team, and then we will talk about their potential possibility of coming out of that injury tent. Ready to go?
Sure, let's go.
All right, let's start with Florida State. 3-2, the tough games left are Clemson, Wake Forest, and Florida. Probable to return, questionable to return, or out?
I'm going to go with out, because I think they lose to Syracuse. I think they lose at Boston College. I certainly mm-hmm. don't think they win any three of those road games, Clemson, Wake Forest, and Florida. But at the same time, I feel like if you have paid attention to Florida State, they have gotten better. But
yes.
not good enough that they're going to do anything against Clemson this week. I would be really surprised. So I'm going to say out for the Noles.
Yeah, I agree with you. They've gotten better. Horner Brook has added some stability with that offense. The key is they've got to play four quarters, something yep. we haven't seen from Florida State all season long. All right, next one. West Virginia, they're 3-2. The tough games left are Iowa State, Oklahoma, Baylor, Oklahoma State. Probable, questionable, or out?
Oh, man, I feel like Debbie Downer, but I'm going to go out for West Virginia. It's because of the road games. That's why. I mean, yeah. I haven't been impressed with TCU. Texas Tech, I think, they've been respectable, but I just don't mm-hmm. see them winning two of those three on the road. And I don't see them winning any of those tough games left either.
Yeah, I mean, you're at Oklahoma, you're at Baylor, you're at Kansas State, at TCU. This is brutal for Neil Brown in his first season.
Right?
As well as Austin Kendall coming in as the starter. All right, now here's a really good one. Considering we have seen, I think, like three versions of this team so far. Maryland at 3-2. Are they probable to return? They should make a bowl. Questionable to return. Their prospects still iffy or out. And that. Tough games left are Minnesota, Michigan, Ohio State, Michigan State.
Oh, my gosh. I live in Maryland. I went to see Mike Locksley before they lost to Temple. I was like, what? Well, you're doing great, man. And then I was like, wait, he lost to Temple. I can't. I think, okay. They're not gonna win any of those games. Minnesota, Michigan, Ohio State, Michigan State. Sorry. I don't see it. I'm trying to find three more. I don't think they win at Purdue.
Yeah. And then you got Indiana and Nebraska.
I'm like the most hated journalist in Maryland anyway right now. So out, Terps.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you're just doing your job, right? There's nothing wrong with that.
Do you disagree?
And Heather, listen, no, I'm with you because I don't know who this team is. And with Jackson getting injured and, like two completely different, the way the offense looks out there the first couple of weeks, I understand they beat up some teams where you're like, I'm not sure about them anyway, but it's really hard to gauge. They have a ton of talent. It's just hard to gauge where this team is, especially if they don't have quality quarterback play and they can't protect the quarterback. And
now that I said that, they're going to beat Ohio State or Michigan and then they're going to lose at home to Indiana. There you go.
Exactly. All right, here's a really good one. Just because the expectations, I think, were pretty low entering the season. Then we saw them, play Notre Dame to open the season. Louisville at 3-2. Their tough games left Wake, Clemson, Virginia. So probable, questionable, or out?
You know what? I'm going to give them probable. I like what Satterfield's doing there at Louisville. I see some winnable games on the schedule. I'm not saying they can't win at Wake Forest. I think they can find three more. I'm not a believer in Virginia. I know they were ranked. After I watched what Notre Dame did to them, I think somebody else can find a way too. I'll go with probable to return. I think he's doing a great job there.
Yeah. They've surprised a lot of people. They play hard, and that's a big difference from a year ago under Petrino.
Yes.
All right, two mm-hmm. more teams. Let's go with Oregon State. And who would have thought we'd be bringing up Oregon State, but after beating UCLA the way they did, sorry, Chip. They're 2-3, tough games left. Utah at Cal, at Arizona, Washington, Arizona State, at Oregon. Is this a team that has any chance to make a bowl?
Oh, gosh. Here I go again. No shot.
No shot.
No shot. I mean, look at that lineup.
It's ridiculous. Yet, know what? The way the Pac-12 is, I think they're going to steal one game in that. And we're talking about tough games left, right?
Yeah, they can steal one of those, but I don't. I mean, they're 2-3 right now. No, I don't. I'm not buying in yet.
Okay, South Carolina is our final team here. They're 2-3. They still got to go to Georgia. They got Florida. Texas A&M on the road, and Clemson, and that's a rivalry game. And then, you know, still on that schedule, Tennessee, Vandy, and Appalachian State. So is this a team, when we talk about their bowl hopes, probable, questionable, or out?
I'm going to go with questionable, because when I look at them, I think they should win all three of those games against Tennessee, Vandy, and Upstate, right? And if they would have the Aggies at home, to me, I would say they're back. But yeah, that's a road trip. I realize Texas A&M isn't great, but I think, you know, they have a shot, I think, against the Aggies on the road. So I'll say probable. Questionable.
Okay. Yeah. That's a team that's teetering. Okay.
Yeah.
Heather, this was great. I appreciate you taking the, you know, going down this road here when we talk about bowl teams. You know what we're going to do though? We're going to try to revisit this and see how those teams fare later on. If you decide that you want to come back on the pod, because we'd love to have you back.
Sure. Yeah, that'd be fun. That's great. Yeah. Let's just keep record of everything I said that was wrong.
Hey, Heather, don't worry. I ignore when I'm wrong whenever I'm talking to Pollock. So don't worry. You're good to go here on this podcast.
All right. So you're saying what happens on the podcast stays on the podcast? Is that how it works?
Exactly. Exactly. Heather, thank you so much. We'll be talking to you, of course, I'm sure, as the weeks progress and as we get closer to November and in November and try to sort this whole thing out with the playoff.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me on.
Appreciate Pollock and Heather Dinich for joining us here on the podcast. A reminder to our loyal listeners, you can submit questions that Herbie will answer on Monday. Leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts with your questions, and the best questions will make the air, and we'll ask Herbie. We also want to thank our sponsors, Allstate and Dr. Pepper. Also to our producers, Taylor Schwenk and Gabe Bassane. Coming up on Friday, Pollock makes his picks, and Marcus Spears will join us with his thoughts on what it's like to play in a rivalry game at LSU with that crowd at night, and how he views this year's Tigers team. Until then, we'll see you on Friday.